On ABC Radio National, you're listening to Counterpoint with Michael Duffy and Paul Comrie-Thompson.
There's a general consensus amongst commentators around Australia that people are not happy. And today our main feature is the story of Kate Stewart and her involvement in the protest convoy of trucks that will be honking their horns in Canberra on August the 22nd. Here's a short preview.
Out here, out in the bush, The trucks are what feeds us. The trucks bring our food to town, the trucks take the cattle away, the trucks bring our grain in. Without the trucks, the nation stops and people respect the trucks.
Convoy Kate, coming up later right here, that's Counterpoint, Good Time Radio. Right around Australia, from Charleville to Canberra, from Port Hedland to Hobart, on ABC Radio National. From time to time, Counterpoint seeks out opinion and analysis on issues such as the place of the right in Australian intellectual life, and we ask what important ideas it might have to contribute. This is an interesting time to be talking about political ideas in public debate, following the terrible events in Norway a few weeks ago. One of the phenomena after September 11 was how so many on the left responded by saying the West deserved the attacks. Indeed, as the sociologist Peter Saunders noted at the time, these people broke the habit of a lifetime and blamed the victim. But the response to this most recent act of terror has been quite different. Today, our guests are the editors of Australia's two most well-known conservative magazines. Historian Keith Winchattle edits Quadrant, a magazine which has been around since the 1950s. Tom Switzer is the local editor of the British Spectator, which has existed considerably longer, although its Australian edition is only a pup. Michael Duffy began his conversation with Keith Winchattle by asking how he would describe Quadrant to someone who hasn't read it.
Well, Quadrant, as you said, it's a long time publication, 50 years or 60 years, but there's been one core kind of principle behind it all that time, and that's the concept of cultural freedom, or civilizational freedom and religious freedom, all those package of ideas. And in the Cold War, it was primarily an anti-communist publication, but it also played an important role in arguing for market freedom, for the liberalisation of economies, which was obviously a successful campaign in Australia. The big issue for us in the last 2 years, anyway, has been climate change. And the perspective we take on that is that it's a threat to freedom. And it's quite interesting that President of the Czech Republic, Václav Klaus, was in Australia, because his basic aim is to spread the word that the Greens, who are the main force behind climate change policies, are people who want to restrict everything that everybody does, who want to tell people how to live their lives and how the economy should run and which businesses will be allowed to publish and which won't and what time you're allowed to drive your car into town. That's the kind of social engineering and social authoritarianism that anyone who edits Quadrant has got to be against, or you wouldn't do the job.
You also have a vigorous literary section, don't you? Indeed, the literary editor is Les Murray. Why is that still relevant?
Because literary freedom is one thing that distinguished the West from communist society, and artistic freedom, in fact, not just literary. I mean, the career of Shostakovich, etc., shows that musical freedom was kind of in short supply in the Soviet Union, and certainly cultural freedom in communist China was and still is almost non-existent. So literature is one quarter of our publication, and Les Murray is our editor, but we publish probably more poetry per year than any other periodical publication.
And what about your online edition? I think, well, when I say an online edition, it's really almost a separate online magazine, which is edited by Michael Connor. I think that's probably the main conservative or liberal website in Australia. How popular is that?
Well, it's exceeded beyond our wildest dreams, quite frankly. Last year, we had 1 million page views over the course of a year. Now, that's not hits, that's actual page views. You want to get hits, you multiply that by four or five times, depending how people bounce around. But we're on track to have about 1.5 million in the current 12 months. So Quadrant Online is a different publication to Quadrant Magazine. Quadrant Magazine's a monthly, and you have to go for long, less timely issues, whereas Quadrant Online can pick up events day by day. It's really a daily journal. In fact, if you have got an online site and you're not a daily journal, you just don't get the traffic that you do if you are.
Tom, can I ask you some of the same questions? Describe the Australian Spectator for those people who haven't seen it.
I would describe the Australian Spectator as the Australian version of the British Spectator, which is one of the world's oldest English-speaking magazines. It's not only one of the quirkiest and wittiest publications in the world, but it's also very relevant to the public policy and the political debate and cultural debate in Britain. It's obviously still very early days for the Australian edition. We've only been around for 2 to 3 years, but our role model is the British edition, and we hope to have the same kind of impact.
And at the moment, it's a combination, isn't it, with some Australian content at the front and then the English magazine?
That's right. There's about 12 pages of unique Australian content, including, more often than not, an Australian cover, which features some very good eye-catching art. But you're right, the bulk of it is still very much the British Spectator. One of the benefits of this publication is that it comes out on Friday, the same time it comes out in Britain. And in the old days, that is before the Australian edition, loyal readers of the old UK Spectator had to wait a good week before it came in the mail so they can get it in the newsstands now on the Friday.
Well, indeed, it's been published since 1828. Why start an Australian edition now?
Well, this was a decision made by the board of the Barclay Brothers and the Press Holdings in London. They basically took over the Spectator and the Daily Telegraph when Conrad Black's empire folded. Andrew Neil, the CEO of the organisation, decided to export this very good commodity to Australia. And I was very much part of the initial proceedings in the latter part of 2008. And our circulation has almost tripled during the course of the last 2 to 3 years. So it is a successful product, but it is very difficult, of course, in this day and age with online journalism to really make a huge impact.
Keith, you probably already answered this to some extent, but what do you think are the most important ideas that the right, using that term to encompass conservatism and liberalism, say, has to contribute to readers and indeed to public debate in Australia?
The deepest thing we sort of count as one of our, as on our agenda is defence of Western civilization, and these days it needs defending. We've got an intellectual left who really think that Western society is fatally flawed by a whole range of things: capitalism, imperialism, racism, you name it. Western society is supposedly guilty of it. And one of the things that we pursue, and I commission articles on, is people who want to take a counterview to that. Religion is also a very important part of it, and this is something that surprised me. I'm not a religious person, but there's a very vigorous debate going on about religion in Australia, partly from the visits of the sort of well-known atheists like Richard Dawkins, and we've been a vehicle for publishing some works by high-profile atheists. But the thing that surprised me is the vigour of the responses from committed Christians who, from a person who sort of stands back and looks at this debate, you've got to give the Christians a big hand, because they're doing pretty well these days.
Who are some of the writers that you have in the magazine?
Well, we think we have some of the most distinguished writers that Australia's ever produced, and some of the best essayists. I mean, one of the things we try and promote is essay writing rather than, news reporting or feature writing. And we've published recently the collected essays of Peter Ryan, Peter Coleman. We've got a beautiful series by Sophie Masson coming up. We've also got a series on Neil MacDonald, who's one of Australia's leading film critics and has been a long time in the job. We've even got Les Murray editing the Quadrant Book of Poetry, which is coming out as well. In recent issues, we've had Paul Monk wrote a terrific piece about the problems and the decline of America, not saying it's inevitable. We've got Patricia Anderson, Michael Connor, who writes a terrific commentary on theatre criticism and arts policy.
A goodly crew. Tom, I know The Spectator has a reputation as being conservative, but I noticed one of your most popular, I think, columnist is Mark Latham. What's he doing in The Spectator?
Well, you're probably right to identify us as conservative and tilting to the right when it comes to political matters. But look, we are, above all else, a quirky, irreverent magazine, and we are more than welcome to publish a wide range of left-leaning thinkers, including Mark Latham. And I have to say that Mark has now been a columnist with The Spectator Australia for the best part of a year, and I think it has coincided with a pretty significant increase in our circulation. We've been getting a lot of attention, and I think it's largely due to Mark.
Well, he's very good on the Labor Party, isn't he?
Well, yes, but he's also good on sports. I mean, he's a great commentator on rugby league and horse racing. But look, he's quirky, he's irreverent, and look, I have to say, I think he writes better than most members of the Canberra Press Gallery.
And it's always nice to read an article by someone you think you know fairly well, but not having a clue how it's going to end.
That's right, yeah. Now, he keeps people on their toes, and he's a contrarian in many respects. He still has centre-left views on a wide range of issues, and just last week he was a guest speaker at one of our Spectator events debating Lord Nigel Lawson on the carbon tax, and Mark's criticism was essentially that Julie Gillard has sold out and that the Greens have sold out, and that a true carbon tax would be an economy-wide carbon tax, and it should include petrol and agriculture. So he's a true believing lefty still deep down.
Just putting Mark Latham slightly to the side for this next question, what do you think your magazine is providing for Australia, by which I mean how would we be the poorer if it wasn't there intellectually?
Well, I think one of the problems with political journalism, Michael, particularly in Canberra, is that people take themselves too seriously. And politics is ultimately a bit of comedy. And one of the good things about The Spectator, I think, is whether it's Mark Latham or Neil Brown, the former Liberal minister, or Tim Blair, who's been a regular contributor, as well as other good writers, we like to make fun of politicians, but doing so in a way that's not too over the top. You know, we peddle a line, I suppose, in our editorials, but we express it in a fairly frivolous manner. You don't want to take yourselves too seriously.
Absolutely. Essence of the national culture.
How do your English masters feel about that?
We're following in their footsteps.
Keith, let's talk about Norway. In early 2002, reflecting on the response to September 11, you described the prevailing ideology of the Western intelligentsia, as you called it, as being predominantly anti-Western and influenced by cultural relativism, and indeed in some cases moral nihilism. But you did express the hope at that time that September 11 might lead many to abandon some of those more extreme views. If we look now at the response to Norway in recent weeks, do you think that hope has been fulfilled?
I think I made a big call which was totally wrong. I thought that there were a few people on the left who came out in support of the United States of America, would you believe, after they'd been attacked, because most of the leading figures of the left, Chomsky, Susan Sontag, etc., said, well, this is what you get for being an imperial power and for pushing people around the world. It's, you know, chickens coming home to roost sort of argument. And I read a small number of people on the left who swapped sides. Christopher Hitchens is a pretty notorious one. The editor of the New Republic in America was, you know, turned out to be a patriot after all, which that publication, you know, was usually pretty much on the left. But I think that was a kind of short-term change, and Hitchens is really the only major convert that you can think of amongst writers. And look, the Norwegian thing, I've been kind of stunned by the fact that how vicious the Australian left were to put the boot into anybody who had the slightest kind of sympathy for the views that this crazy Norwegian gunman pursued himself.
He quoted a lot of people, didn't he, including yourself, I think.
Well, it's no secret. I feel I had to defend myself in writing an article saying that, look, the sort of stuff I'm saying doesn't provoke murder. I don't preach violence. I don't say anyone should be killed. I mean, I'm entirely committed to the idea that rational debate is the way you solve things, and good policy and good culture and arts and the rest of it comes from looking at the evidence and logic and civilised discussion. And so to be connected in the slightest way with that is not heartbreaking, but my heart sank when I read the paper in the morning and an ABC journalist rang me up and started questioning me about it to try and justify myself as if I'd done something wrong. And it just sort of shows the response in some publications like Crikey and New Matilda. I thought New Matilda had kind of lapsed for lack of interest, but it's now back on its feet. And this and they led with a thing on Monday morning, you know, 2 days after the Norwegian attacks, criticising Quadrant, criticising anybody else who had dared to defend Western civilization, dared to speak out for freedom of speech, dared to question kind of open-door immigration policies, dared to question multiculturalism. And it's very disheartening that people see action like that as an opportunity to score political hits.
Tom, what do you think? Do you think that the left has changed greatly in the past decade, or do you think concepts of left and right are still as useful as they always have been?
I think they served more importance during the course of the Cold War, but I think that during the post-Cold War era, these labels more often than not foster simplistic divisions and they create artificial alliances. Having said that, though, there is a segment of the left, a very angry, isolationist left, that seems to point the fingers of blame to conservatives for all problems. And you're seeing this right now in the aftermath of this Norway atrocity. I mean, the counter-argument is, must all conservatives answer for the actions of a psychopath? And of course not. That's not to say, of course, that this guy's ideology means that, you know, conservatives as well as liberals and leftists should police their own ranks and condemn those on the right who condone this kind of extremist rhetoric or political violence. But the bottom line here is, when it comes to what can be defined as the left, its critique of the conservative cause in the aftermath of this terrible incident is that somehow this guy, this psychopath, is somehow the logical product of the larger anti-Islamic movement or commentary is a complete nonsense.
Keith Winchattel is the editor of Quadrant, and Tom Switzer edits the local part of the Australian Spectator.